Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We'll follow up now on our segment yesterday about the Conservative Political Action Conference taking place in Budapest, Hungary, with the keynote address by Hungary's president, Viktor Orban, who advocates what he calls illiberal democracy. Orban has become a hero to the rising faction of the American right in ways similar to how Vladimir Putin has in these respects, eliminating checks and balances like an independent judiciary and an independent press. Also similar to Putin, Orban is openly hateful toward LGBTQ people. In his speech at the conference yesterday, Orban called LGBTQ people deniers of biology, comparing them to people who deny science. He also touts conservative Christianity as a basis for government policy, similar to the organizer of the conference, Matt Schlapp, president of the American Conservative Union. In Budapest yesterday, Schlapp tied banning abortion to banning immigration. He touted banning abortion as a means to a more native-born population growth. Orban has referred to, quote, the missing European children, meaning white babies who were not being born. So the push for banning abortion in the U.S. and the race-based push for banning immigration are related more than usually gets discussed. It got discussed in Budapest. Our guest on this today is perhaps the leading expert on Hungary and Orban in the United States, Princeton Sociology and International Affairs Professor Kim Shepley. Among her many writings is an article on the website Verfassung's blog called What Culture Wars Hide. Professor Shepley, thanks for coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for inviting me.
You write that American conservatives have chosen Hungary as proof of concept for the politics they want. What do you mean by proof of concept?
Well, to understand that, I think it's worth remembering that sort of back in the 1960s, you know, progressives in the United States used to look to Sweden, right, as the country that progressive forces won lots of elections. They were able to establish a social state. They were able to introduce feminist reforms. It looked like a paradise to social democrats. And now we're seeing that the right wing of American politics, and particularly the Trumpist right of American politics, is looking to Hungary in much the same way. You know, so Viktor Orban espouses the kind of culture war issues that the Trump wing of the Republican Party is now famous for. And he's also locked in power. So just a month ago, Orban won his fourth successive election, even though the polls showed him neck and neck with the opposition on the eve of the election. In the end, he pulled out an election by 20 points. So, you know, basically, this is the vision that American conservatives would love to see here, a combination of culture wars on the surface and autocracy and never having to worry about losing elections underneath it.
Well, do you think he was reelected freely and fairly? Because even in the mainstream press in this country, that includes people being very critical of Orban, I've seen many references to him winning reelection in April in a landslide. But you write that Orban engages in persistent sabotage of democratic institutions, including converting minority support, into parliamentary supermajorities. So was the election free and fair? And how does he fiddle with parliament?
No. I mean, the election was, as the International Observer said, you know, conducted on an uneven playing field. So first of all, Orban, after he came to power in 2010, completely changed the electoral system. And it meant that the only way the opposition, which was a set of fragmented parties, both to the left of him and to the right of him, the only way they had a chance of dislodging him was if they worked together and put up single candidates in each of the districts. Because otherwise, you know, it's a sort of winner, first past the post, winner take all election system like American House races are. And it was very difficult to run that kind of system in a multi-party election field. So he forced the opposition, the opposition, after they'd lost several times, finally realized they had to join forces and work together. And they did that for this election, which is why we thought that they had a chance of winning. But in the end, Orban made a bunch of other changes to the election law that allowed him to win an overwhelming victory, even though he does not have overwhelming political support. So just to give you one example of this, he introduced this law as soon as he saw the opposition was figuring out his system and figuring out a way to get around it. Mm-hmm. He introduced a law last November that allowed him to essentially move his voters to the districts where they were needed to put close districts over the edge into his column. So he picked not only his own candidates, but he picked his voters for this last election.
Whoa. You know, we have, did you see that in this country, there's a Republican candidate for the nomination for governor of Colorado who supports ending the popular vote for governor if he's elected and moving to an electoral college style system vote for governor in the future based on a formula that would give more weight to the voters from rural counties, ending one person, one vote in gubernatorial elections. Is something like that being modeled by Orban too?
Exactly. So, you know, election law is complicated, it's technical, and most voters' eyes glaze over when you try to explain how these systems work. And so what you see happening here, you know, in fact, often encouraged by this collaboration with Orban that has been going on between the American right and Orban's people for quite some time now, it's possible to change the election rules to reach any result you want, practically any result you want. And so the proposal you suggest from the Colorado governor is one of those things. There's another one, you know, called the independent state legislature theory that's being offered here in the United States, where, you know, in a presidential election, if the results of the popular vote are unclear, a number of state legislatures are now proposing that they get to pick the electors if the voters haven't made a clear choice. And then the question is, what's a clear choice? And what we've seen since 2020 is the, you know, the possibility of denying a clear choice by simply denying that there was a clear choice. So, you know, you see that happening even at presidential level here as well. And, you know, Orban's model, which is that, you know, if the details are sufficiently technical, it's very difficult even for the election observers, let alone for the Hungarian public as a whole, to figure out what happened.
And of course, in this country now, we have the Republican nominee after the primary this past week in Pennsylvania, who apparently would have been all too willing to do that in the 2020 election, just say that it appeared to him that the result of the Pennsylvania vote for president was unclear and give it to the legislature. So
exactly.
That's where we may be headed in this country, and it's very interesting to hear you describe how Orban, the hero now for many on the political right, is modeling that. President Trump submitted a video for this conference this week. Tucker Carlson submitted a video for this conference this week. This connection between banning immigration and banning abortion that I mentioned in the intro, based on a combination of Orban's words and those of Matt Schlapp from the American Conservative Union in Budapest this week that's been widely quoted. Is that a connection you've heard before?
Yeah, so it's true that Orban actually shot to fame in Europe and also among American conservatives when that massive wave of migration from Syria, from Iraq, from Afghanistan hit Europe in 2015, and Orban said, you know, build a wall. He built a fence. He built the fence pretty quickly, but he put Europe on notice that people who didn't look like the Europeans already there were not going to be welcome in Europe. And so this generated quite a lot of attention from Republican conservatives here. In fact, the Trump plan for building a wall at the border follows almost step by step exactly what Orban did, appeasement, both with regard to Putin and with regard to Orban. And Orban and Putin also have a kind of alliance we can go into, you know, if there's time. But Merkel's view was that you just keep talking to these people. And if you keep talking to these people, you know, they won't hurt you, you won't hurt them, and you can all kind of live together. Well, Merkel's appeasement of Putin, as you can see, is now widely regarded as a major failure. And I think people are now starting to see that Merkel's appeasement of Orban is also a failure. It turns out Hungary is one of the places that makes German cars. And, you know, the economic health and well-being of Germany depended a lot on Orban being on board. And he knew it. He's protected the German car companies while he's, you know, ransacked the economy in other kinds of ways. And, you know, he's been allowed to stay in power. If I can just say one thing about the gender point. So this is absolutely right, that far right, you know, conservatives world over are really leaning into, you know, anti-LGBTQI rights and into, you know, the whole concept of gender fluidity. You know, so we see this with DeSantis's, you know, removing Disney's tax breaks here for, you know, honoring gay rights. Mm-hmm. And Orban has been right on board with that. One thing I did when I lived in Hungary in the 90s was I was the founder of the Central European University's gender studies program. Hmm. So I've seen this coming from a long way off. And Orban has closed all the gender studies programs that we helped create and that many wonderful feminists in Hungary have helped, you know, have created. All those are gone. Central European University is out of the country. And, you know, Orban continues his anti-gender fluidity campaign up to the point where, to circle back to the EU, every time the word gender is mentioned in an EU document, Orban will resist, will actually force them into hours-long debates over removing the word gender. So, yes, this is a big way in which he's annoying the EU.
Well, where does all of that, the homophobia, the anti-gender fluidity, the male chauvinism, fit into the nationalist politics that I think are at the heart of the movement in both countries, Hungary and here? I mean, that's not foreign immigration. People who they, you know, people are who they are on the sexuality and gender spectrums. You can't make a political decision to be gay if you're not sexually attracted to people of your own sex, for example. So why otherize native-born LGBTQ people? How is that relevant to their project?
Well, I think a lot of this is about the politics of nostalgia, right? Of, you know, making the world safe for the days when a small group of, you know, ethnically homogeneous men ruled the world. And so just as we're seeing intolerance of any form of, you know, sort of ethnic or certainly racial diversity, we're also seeing intolerance of gender diversity. I mean, women have really changed the world in the last, you know, half century. And there are a lot of men who are resisting this. And so it comes out in all kinds of forms from, you know, anti-abortion campaigns, which will keep women, you know, having kids and therefore not doing other things, all the way through to, you know, anti-gay activities. Orban's parliament passed a law that bars, you know, displaying any form of gender fluidity to children. And they've been going after book authors and bookstores that display children's books that, you know, show kids with two moms or something like that. You know, it's been really a kind of aggressive anti-gay and anti-woman campaign. That's part of it. So the ethnic nationalism is part of it. The gender nationalism is another part of it. And unfortunately, they come together into a toxic mix.
So here's my last question before we run out of time. Is Orban, therefore, establishing a conservative theocracy? And let me set up that question with a clip of Matt Schlapp, organizer of the Conference of American Conservatives that's there in Orban's orbit in Budapest right now. He's head of the American Conservative Union. And in this clip, he appears to want some kind of theocracy in praising Orban.
He has embraced their Christian heritage. And if Christian societies want to have their values reflected in government, that's a good thing.
So he said Christian societies want to have their values reflected in government. We see that in the abortion movement, certain brands of religion enshrined as the law for everybody. Does Orban want, or is he establishing a theocracy in Hungary?
So such a good question. So he constantly says he's defending Christian Europe. And yet, when you look at what he does, it's almost the opposite. So one thing he did when he first came to power in 2011, his parliament passed a law that eliminated the tax-exempt status of 320 or so religious organizations in Hungary, many of them small evangelical churches from the U.S. trying to get a toehold in Hungary. And many of them just failed. They had to leave the country. They couldn't afford to operate under the tax burdens that the government saddled them with at that time. Orban keeps defending Christian Europe. He himself has been rarely seen in a church. What he's done instead is to force the churches to buckle under his leadership. And so the churches maintain their tax breaks at the expense of their autonomy. So he's constantly pressuring them to do favors for the government whenever, you know, he needs favors that churches can do. So He has. It's not. It's not a government where the where Christianity dominates the government. It's exactly the other way around. And I think if American Christian conservatives understood what Orban has actually done with, you know, with Christian Europe and Hungary, I think they would be appalled.
Kim Shepley, perhaps a leading U.S. expert on Hungary and Viktor Orban. She's a professor of sociology and international affairs at Princeton. Among her many writings is an article on the website for Fossing's blog called What Culture Wars Hide, which is about a lot of what we've been talking about today. Thank you so much for so much time and so much enlightenment. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Love your show, Brian.